Z ballot breakdown.
Ballot breakdown.
Broomhead breaks down who and what are on your ballot. AZ ballot breakdown.
Yeah, it's very interesting. There is a Marist poll that is out. It just was published yesterday, and it shows that President Biden edges ahead of President Trump in a two-way presidential contest in voters that are definite voters. These are people that are absolutely sure they're going to vote. Take it for what it's worth. All these polls, 3 percentage points separate Biden, 51% to 48. Now, here is the interesting thing about this. There's a couple of things. These are definite voters that are saying we are absolutely going to vote. But the president, the current president, has now crossed over that all important 50% threshold. That what about likely voters and how do you get turnout? And what about those people that are on the edges to come out? That's part of it. I think that's a big part of this. But the other thing is, as Julia asked, we do the Big Q poll question every day. And today Julia wrote the question because Gatos is out. And it had to do how much of an effect do you believe or will this trial have an effect on voters? And the answer has to be yes. To some degree or another, it is. There are some people in this country that believe that this is an abuse of the legal system. And I think that's going to motivate them out to the polls to vote for Trump. For other people, having even being charged with a crime as a president and someone running for president of the United States, they are going to be concerned about voting for someone that's even been charged with a crime. So one way or the other, no matter which side of that argument you fall on, I don't think that it's possible for it not to have an effect on your decision and how and who you'll vote for. I think both of those are viable conversations. Here's another thing that I think is fascinating, and it has nothing to do with the presidential election. There is an organization called Progress Arizona. It's a nonprofit group. They are working to unseat two Arizona Supreme Court justices who are up for re-election and who upheld the near total abortion ban in the law, Justice Catherine Hackett King and Justice Clint Bolick. They'll be up for retention in November on the ballot. On April 9, they were in the majority of the 4-2 opinion that upheld the 1864 criminalizing most abortions. Here's my problem with this. This is where I think politics takes a left turn. And I don't mean that against the political left. I think it takes a wrong turn. Let me put it that way. These two justices were interpreting what the law said. I understand the politics of this and people saying we're going to go win elections in November and we're going to defeat the legislature and we're going to flip the majority. And I don't know that that holds true, but I understand the sentiment. I understand the emotion. I really do. This is an emotional issue. If you don't like that the Arizona legislature wrote the law in 2022 that was signed into law by Governor Ducey that basically said if Roe v. Wade is overturned, this law does not supersede any previously written law. And that's not the exact verbiage, but it's very close. But that's what the law said. The Supreme Court's job is to read the law and interpret its meaning. And that's exactly what they did. They didn't write it. They didn't comment on whether they liked it or not. What they said was, this is how the law is written. This is how it is to be interpreted. If you don't like the 1864 law, go back and write something different, which I think is going to happen. But the idea, and this is where the weaponization of things happens, you don't like a decision that they made, but it was the right decision in my mind. Now, I've heard from people on both sides of this issue that said, legally, I talked to Congressman Greg Stanton. Congressman Stanton is a pro-choice Democrat. Congressman Greg Stanton is outspoken in his beliefs and what he believes should be done and how Arizona should fix this. But when I asked him, and this is somebody that hates this 1864 law, did the Arizona Supreme Court do the right thing legally? And he said, yes. Now, the Attorney General in Arizona, Chris Mays, disagrees. Chris Mays believes it wasn't the right decision. She believes that law, but she also believes the 2022 law violates your right to privacy. That's a different argument. But if the majority of people looked at this and said the Arizona State Supreme Court did its job, it did what it was supposed to do. Again, it wasn't a 4-3 decision. It was a 4-2 decision. I think one justice recusing himself. The point I'm making as far as elections go, I am someone that believes the people should choose. if the people of Arizona, for some reason, are angry enough. But it's the one issue voting that bothers me. I don't know Justice Hackett King. I don't know her. And I do know Clint Bolick, Justice Bolick, casually. I know his wife casually. I don't know them very well. But if you look at his record and his history, he's a good man. This is a good man. And you may not like this decision, but should he lose his job because he said, I'm reading this law and the way I interpret this law, this isn't Clint Bolick saying abortion should be illegal except for, that's not what they're saying at all. It's an interpretation of a law that was written in 2022. So the frustration for me, and it's not a defense of him or her or both, it's a defense of our system. I understand anger, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand the anger towards the legislators that wrote that law. I've heard people say they knew what they were doing when they wrote that law in 2022. It told the voters one thing, and then it did another, and they planned this all along knowing that Roe was going to be overturned and then we default to this law. If you want to say that, I don't agree with it. But if you hold that against legislators that wrote the piece of legislation, that's the world you're supposed to do it in. But when a body like the Supreme Court says we have to interpret what the meaning of this law is based on the way it was written, we're looking at the piece of paper, we're looking at the document, and the document says it was not meant to supersede any other law, it is saying it's going to default when if Roe is defeated and Dobbs is sent, you know, it sends this back to the states. Then that's the way you have to look at it. And the reason why I'm doing this in the ballot breakdown is we all understand that in the minds of most voters, abortion was not a huge topic. In Arizona, it's moved up the list. I don't know that it's going to be number one or number two with voters, but it certainly has moved up the list. It certainly has motivated the Democrat base in Arizona. It would be a shame for them to just go scorched earth on people that had nothing to do, especially if they're capable of doing their jobs. And I think in this case, if you look at the way they've handled things, they're capable of doing their jobs. I'm not advocating for re-election for anyone. I just look at this and think someone did their job. They're risking their political career. They understand that this was not going to be popular, but they said, I'm reading a document, and this is what the document says. And then to hold them accountable for the writing of that document doesn't seem fair to me. But what it does say about the Arizona elections is there are now people that have been reinvigorated, re-energized when it comes to how they're going to vote. And Republicans have better come up with something in how they're in a plan to retain the majority in the House and the Senate, because a tailwind now for the Democrats, who really were in some trouble. Let's be honest. You've got a Democratic governor that has set a record in 15 months. She's vetoed more pieces of legislation than any other governor in history. So there isn't necessarily a symbiotic relationship or a good working relationship between the Democrat governor and a Republican-led legislature. There's a little bone of contention. There have been a couple of the vetoes from the governor that were bipartisan pieces of legislation that were vetoed. So there's a little bit there. Let's keep the checks and balances in place and the balance of power in place. There's some of that was going on. The economy, the border issue in Arizona, very strong issues for Republicans. And for Republicans, you're thinking, we run the right candidates that run the right campaigns, and we're going to be able to keep our majority and maybe even increase it. This topic absolutely, absolutely affects that ability. And it's just one of those issues we have to keep watching. Talked about this earlier, and it is an excellent question. How much money do you have to earn to bring home $100,000 a year? And why does it matter? It's how much individuals are being taxed, and do you think it's fair? We'll get to that coming up here in just a moment.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Well, I'm running down the road trying to loosen my load. I got seven women on my mind. Four that want to own me, two that want to stone me, one, so she's a friend of mine.
All right, thanks for being here. Happy Tuesday from the Mike Broomhead Show. So an interesting story. I got it this morning from Fox Business has a story. How much do you have to earn in order to bring home $100,000 in different states? So what are you paying in federal, local, and state taxes? It's a great study. I want you to think about this. In the most expensive places, Oregon, California. Actually, Oregon is more expensive than California, which surprised me. Hawaii is very expensive as well. But then it seems like the most expensive state from on this map that I can see is Oregon, and it costs you you have to earn $156,000 in order to bring home $100,000, which means you're paying over $1,000 per week in taxes overall, local, state, and federal taxes. That's outrageous to me. And that's somebody that is not considered to be very wealthy. Now, there are some people that say that's good money. If you make 150 grand a year, you're doing very well. And I would agree with that. But I would not call them the mega rich. I would not call them the super wealthy. They're paying $1,000 per week in taxes. To me, that's outrageous. In Arizona, the average in Arizona, you have to make almost $143,000. So call it $143,000. That is an outrageous amount of money you're paying per week. As a matter of fact, let me, while we're doing this, I'm going to do the math on this. And you would be paying, between, I guess, $42,000. So $43,000. If you divide that by 52, you're paying $826, about $830 a week in taxes. So I want you to think about your current situation, because I'm going to read some headlines to you. 40% of renters think they'll never own a home. That's up from 27% last year. Black and Hispanic voters are embracing Trump on the economy because of well-being. I've got a story about the fastest growing jobs in Arizona, which I'll get to in a moment. Retail clothing giant Express is filing for bankruptcy. They're closing more than 100 stores. But let's look at some of the fastest growing jobs here in Arizona. And this is a list in the top 50. Transportation and distribution managers is in the top 50. But if we look at this and we just look at the top five, brokerage clerks, biological science teachers, ushers, computer hardware, lobby attendants, ticket takers, computer hardware engineers, material engineers. If you look at some of the salaries, the median annual salary for a materials engineer, whatever that is $129,000. They are not going to bring home $100,000 a year in what they have to pay. And we are a reasonable tax state. When you look at how our tax structure has been changed, taxes in Arizona, the state taxes are much lower than they were before on businesses and individuals. The reason why I mention this is, as Americans, we continue to be told that the wealthy have to pay their fair share. What is your fair share? And it depends. If you are someone that admires the government, if you are someone that thinks that the government is doing a very good job, maybe it's differently. Maybe you think that. The class warfare fight that we've had for such a long time, it doesn't make sense to me. For everybody out there that's struggling, if you are someone that is worried that with gas prices being high, forget saving money. Forget putting money aside to buy a house someday. Forget an emergency savings account in case your car breaks down. You're just trying to keep your head above water. Food on the table, gas in the gas tank, utilities on, and pay your rent. You're just trying to do that. And you're worried about being able to do that. What would it mean to you to have even 10%? So if you're paying $830 for round numbers, if you're one of those families, even someone that's making enough money to bring home 100 grand a year, if you are paying $825 in taxes per week, what if you had 20% of that money back? What if you had $165 a week more than you have now? Anybody out there believe that we couldn't pay 20% less to all of the governments, the federal, local, and state governments in taxes? Does anybody out there believe that you could do that? You'd be much better off, but the governments wouldn't suffer. I do. And that's the what I have been harping on, what I have been talking about for a long time with the U.S. economy. Ronald Reagan said it best. We don't have high inflation because the people are living too well. We have high inflation because the government is living too well. The printing of money, the borrowing of money, the wasting of money, the losing of money. It is inefficient and it is on a path that is unsustainable. They continue to deficit spend, and the president is out there hawking a budget that wants to increase the amount of spending by the federal government, and it's also going to increase the deficit. He says he's decreasing the deficit. There is not a map out there that believes. Now, he may in his mind say, yes, I'm increasing deficit, but I'm doing it slower than I wanted to before or it was going to do before, meaning I'm decreasing the deficit. No, it isn't. It is increasing, whether you're saying it's increasing at a slower pace or not. Every American should be looking at this. Every American should be looking at what they pay in federal, state, and local taxes and asking themselves, do you believe you're getting value? Because you and I are going to run, we're going to vote in November. Who are we going to collectively vote for? That's a great question. In a moment, we're going to talk about education. It's one of my favorite topics to talk about. Arizona not only has the number one public high school in the country, they have got 12 in the top 100. That may surprise you, but I'll tell you who it is and why next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
So if you were in business, pick a business. I was an electrician. If I said to you that the number one electrical contracting company in the entire nation is right here in Arizona, and 12 of the top 100 were right here in Arizona as well, wouldn't you be impressed by that? And if you were an electrical contractor, wouldn't you want to know what they were doing to be that? If we had the number one restaurant in the entire nation here in Arizona and 12 of the top 100 right here in Arizona, we'd want to know, what are they doing? How are they pulling that off? Well, in Arizona, we have the number one high school. Public high school in the country is the Basis in Peoria. 10 of the top 12, or I should say 10 of the 12 in Arizona that are in the top 100 are also Basis schools. The other are university high schools, one in the Tolleson Unified School District and the other in the Tucson Unified School District. So I mentioned this earlier. I've got a whole stack of stuff in front of me. The city of Chandler, Chandler Unified School District, is turning to retired cops to talk to kids, which I think is a phenomenal idea. It keeps the cops engaged in public service, and it gets kids to have a different attitude toward policing. I think it's fantastic. School leaders packed the Arizona State Board of Education meeting over Title I funding issues, which we'll get into possibly in a few moments. And where you have to live, and how much it costs you on average nationally to live in a good school district. You know what's interesting about all of this is you're going to see pushback. I haven't gotten any emails, but I haven't looked very closely, and I haven't seen a lot of messages on this yet. But I'm going to get them. And it is going to be pushback from educators that say, well, the Basis schools are excellent because of their business model and they handpick their students and they do this. But they have a requirement for excellence. They have a standard of excellence that if you want to meet that standard of excellence, come to school here. Let me explain. When I was much younger, I know this is going to sound like a silly analogy, and it is, but it's true. I played Pop Warner football at a very young age. I was 11 or 12 years old. And I played for an organization called the Fort Myers Rebels. And the Fort Myers Rebels were a perennial powerhouse in the 1970s. You would have, and it was required in Pop Warner football, you had a maximum of 30 kids on a roster. We would get 60 12-year-olds trying out for a 30-man roster. And so that meant you got cut at 12 years old. They would cut you from the team. And I made the team. I also played, on the same team for two seasons with Deion Sanders, which helped us be a powerhouse program. The point is they had a standard of excellence. And there were other Pop Warner programs around Southwest Florida and around the country. And we were known as a powerhouse because they set a standard of excellence and they adhere to their standard of excellence. Now, you want to debate whether or not any kid at 12 years old should be cut or they should keep them around. But you can argue that all you want. But having a standard of excellence and requiring that of your coaches, even at a volunteer position with 12-year-old kids, and having 12-year-olds committed to the game of football, meaning we all dressed the same when we went to, we had to have the same equipment bags, and we wore blue blazers, and we wore white dress shirts underneath and khaki pants when we went to away games, so we looked like a team and we acted like a team. All of these things were requirements because they wanted to be excellent. If you look at the NFL, if you look at organizations, they have a requirement of excellence, which is how they become legendary. I'm trying to think of another word. In the public school system, we continue to cater to the lowest common denominator. We aren't going to have accelerated programs or AP courses because of diversity and because of, no, what we should be doing is striving for excellence. We have a standard of excellence at this school. If you want to be excellent, come to school here. There are schools that do this when it comes to athletics. We have a football program at this school or a baseball program at this school, or we're known for basketball at this school. And if you want to come here, you better be the best in the country because we don't settle for anything less than the absolute best. Why is it that we've got the basis schools? We've got 12 out of the top 100 schools in Arizona, are in Arizona, nationally. Of all of the high schools, public high schools in the country, Arizona has 12 of the top 100. 10 of those 12 are basis schools. You're going to tell me it is a rigged game, and you can say that all you want. Or what we can do as parents, if you live in a district, why are you not asking the school board where you live, why aren't you reaching out to the basis schools and asking them what they are doing? And not everything they're doing is going to fit. Not everything they're going to do is going to fit. My brother went to high school. My surviving brother, my youngest brother, went to a high school. And he played football for a guy named Bill Shields. Now, Bill Shields was one of the guys I admired most in coaching, and he got the most out of these kids. He took them from a program that won 3 games in a season to winning 7 games in a season to going to the state finals twice. Was that a mistake? Was that a fluke? Or was it a guy that said, I'm going to ask you to commit to excellence? And he would say to these kids, I can't promise you that if you come to the spring practices and you give it 100%, if you come to the summer weights programs all summer long and lift weights and work out and you come into practice every day, I can't guarantee you we're going to win a state championship. But I can guarantee you if you don't do those 3 things, we won't. And I can guarantee you that if you don't do those 3 things, you're not going to play on this football team. And what you got was kids that rose to the occasion and became excellent. They never won a state championship, but they were in the state finals twice. And when you set an academic goal, when you set any kind of a goal for someone of excellence, when you require excellence from them, if they buy into the model, they will achieve excellence. We see it in Arizona, all the questions and comments about the quality of education in the state of Arizona and how it's not good here. And we're 48th out of 50 states and we're all this. We've got 12 of the top 100 high schools in the entire nation right here in this state. Why are we not dealing with them? Why are we not asking them what they're doing? Why are they not coaching the districts that are failing? Ego is part of it. Excuses is another. You're not going to adapt everything they're doing, but you can adapt enough to improve, and that's something they should be doing. In a moment, we're going to go back to the topic of homelessness as the Supreme Court looks like they may be siding with an Oregon city's crackdown on homelessness. What would that mean here in the Valley, and what would it mean statewide for the plight of homeless people? We'll discuss it next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, we are giving away Suns playoff tickets and giving you an opportunity to enter all day long, 7 a.m. on Arizona's Morning News, coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. And I'm not going to tell you exactly when, but in the 11 o'clock hour, we'll give you a chance with a code word. I'll give you the code word. When you get the code word, you just text that word to 411-923. You also get a chance in the 3 p.m. hour and the 5 p.m. hour to win Suns playoff tickets. So be listening in the next hour for your chance to enter. The Supreme Court appears to be siding with an Oregon city's crackdown on homelessness. The Supreme Court's job, obviously, is to figure out, to decide whether or not a piece of legislation fits within the confines of the document of the United States Constitution. And it's interesting, as you'll hear people say whenever they disagree with the Supreme Court decision, that it's a radical court. This radical court, this radical right-wing court. And I laugh at that because you go back to Ruth Bader Ginsburg when she was on the court, the late justice. She was very overtly left-wing politically. She was even asked by the court, to the chief justice of the court, to moderate her political opinions because they are not to give the appearance of any kind of leaning one way or the other. They are supposed to just interpret the law. There's a big difference there. I had a great conversation. The former senator from Arizona, John Kyle, who is so well respected on both sides of the aisle, he truly is. He is just a brilliant man. I don't know that anybody knows the Constitution better than he does. He has done so much great work and continues to do great work for the state of Arizona. He is just a brilliant man. And I had the privilege of talking to him, and he was on the Senate Judiciary Committee when he was in the Senate. And I asked him, I said, hey, your name has been mentioned as a possibility of being a Supreme Court justice. And he said, no way, which surprised me. And I said, why not? And he said, I've spent my entire career making policy and looking at policy from a partisan, my partisan point of view. Now, I'm paraphrasing his words. He said, I don't know that I could take off my policy hat and then purely judge a piece of legislation on whether or not it was constitutional. And I think that would be a disservice to the American people. And I thought that purely honest answer about his feelings made him even more qualified for the court. I say that because Ruth Bader Ginsburg was overtly partisan, and they loved her for it. Documentaries, the notorious RBG, everything else. But now people that don't agree with her are somehow radical on the other side of the aisle. They have a decision to make on whether or not local jurisdictions have the ability to create laws unique to their jurisdiction to deal with the unique problem of homelessness. Or does a person have a right to sleep in public if they don't have somewhere else to sleep? What's interesting about that is there is a lot of discretion that's used. And I've been out many times. I've mentioned before my ride-alongs with Phoenix PD and other agencies, but mostly with Phoenix PD here in Arizona, a lot with Florida Highway Patrol when I lived in Florida. And I've watched them work, and I've watched them interact with homeless people. I've watched them feed people. I've watched them be kind to people and give them options and opportunities to go somewhere. This isn't cops just sweeping homeless people out of an area and get out of here, you bum. And that's not that you want to have that image in your head. It's a false image. The police agencies around the valley have to balance being a human being and understanding someone's plight with also understanding that there's two sides to a story. You can't damage the quality of life in a neighborhood. You can't take up a sidewalk in front of a business. You can't leave drug paraphernalia around. You can't relieve yourself in public. There are things that are basic human behaviors that must be adhered to. And if you say there's a difference between somebody that won't take help and somebody that can't get help, there's a difference between saying to somebody, you can't sleep here, but we have a shelter bed for you. We're going to take you to a shelter. And someone that says, hey, we're going to take you to a shelter, but you can't drink there. You can't use alcohol there. You can't bring a pet. You can't go and cohabitate with someone. It's a male only or a female only shelter. And that person saying, no, thank you. I don't want help. Okay. But then what's the recourse? Now you get to sleep on the sidewalk in front of someone's home. You get to put up a tent in a park where kids are trying to play soccer. If you're dealing with an addiction issue, now you get to be an addict and you get to leave drug paraphernalia around. You get to behave as addicts behave and erratic behavior. You get to do those things because the courts have now said Or is it unique in that situation? You count on local lawmakers to make pieces of legislation that deal with both. We want to help people. We want to end homelessness. We want to deal with that horrible situation with people. But at the same time, we have a responsibility for the quality of life of everybody that lives in this neighborhood and lives in this town. And we'll see. The idea of it's all or nothing one way or the other is a false narrative. And I'm anxious to see not only how the court decides, but then what public opinion says about the court's decision. And it's a difficult situation to deal with, and tying the hands of legislators and the police is not the way to deal with it. It causes things to be worse. Just after 11 o'clock, we are going to talk about a rancher in southern Arizona and a hung jury in his murder trial. What is the fallout nationally for this? Will there be a retrial? Should there be a retrial? All those things are coming up in the border conversation next.